Welcome to the Transcontinental Race Podcast, finding its way with Komoot, the home of those who go further. Komoot's the ultimate route planner and navigation app that helps you explore more. Since the last podcast, Fiona Kolbinger has been continuing her trail of destruction on Europe's Strava segments. Her traverse across the continent has been like a supermarket sweep of Queen of the Mountains trophies. On social media, hundreds and hundreds of comments chime with cheers of Go Fiona. And as we chase her, we've found fans who have come out to catch a glimpse as she bolts through. Emily Boxer has been following the TCR for a few years now.
This year I was following it and I happened to be walking over the Dolomites. I needed a rest day today and then realised that we were staying at the right place. She just looked like she was loving it. She was super smiley, looked really strong, didn't stop at the top, straight into the descent. It's inspiring.
When Fiona was at Control Point 2, we'd talked about her road to riding the Transcontinental.
I started touring cycling about 5 years ago, race cycling 2 to 3 years ago, and then it quickly escalated. And I did some long distance rides, but never anything over 200 kilometers per day before. And then actually the only thing that I would consider long distance experience is London, Edinburgh, London 2 years ago.
Hi, I'm Stefan, and I'm one of the organizers from Schleudergang in Dresden, Germany, where Fiona was studying until this year. She came to us on a first ride with a jersey of, I think, London, Edinburgh, and that was the first contact. So she showed us that she likes to ride long, long, long rides, but she never told anything. She just said she wanted to ride with her bike and some nice people. She was really strong on the first rides. On every climb, she was in the first group, and we were really impressed.
Stefan said on this week's ride, all anyone was talking about was Fiona.
It was the topic number one on the whole ride, and everyone talked about it, and everyone is really excited here in Dresden.
When Fiona left Control Point 2 in Serbia, only Jonathan Rankin was ahead of her. But when he stopped to sleep, she rode overnight into day three to put herself in first place. Since then, she's led the race through Europe, through Croatia, Slovenia, and the southwest of Austria. It was in Austria that foot problems plagued Jonathan Rankin, and he resorted to riding in socks and propelling himself by pushing down on his shoes that were clipped into the pedals. Eventually, it was too much, and he ended his race with a message that read, "I'm scratching. Feet have started to disintegrate, for a lack of a better description. It's been a pleasure." Fiona hasn't relented her pace. She's accelerated through Austria and northern Italy, Switzerland, and into France. But behind her, the majority of the race still have the third parcours to complete. It takes riders into the Italian Dolomites and up the Gardena Pass. It's in South Tyrol, an area that was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire before the First World War. And though now part of Italy, most people talk in German. From there, there's a short, sharp challenge before they reach another mountain pass. Anna Haslock, race director, helped devise the route.
Because Start CP1 and CP2 have been fairly close together, we've got a big stretch between Control Point 2 and Control Point 3. Control Point 3 starts with the parkour. That will start in the Dolomites, and they'll be asked to take quite a long parkour around Bolzano in Italy. There's some really serious steep climbing just around that town. I think they've all seen it, but it's on the parkour, so they can't avoid it. So there might be a fair bit of walking, I imagine, at that point.
The two climbs out of Bolzano reach almost 30% in places. Fiona had to walk it, and so did Ben Davis, who's behind her in second place.
I did one at night, and I was like, this is awful, because it's just so many steep climbs were, like, super steep. And then I got up this morning and did, like, the second half of the second one. And I was like, this is just nuts, it's so cool, because it was really beautiful.
We caught Ben when he was on top of the Timmelsjok Pass. Jagged snow-capped mountains were all around, and motorbikes, cars and cyclists were carving up the mountain.
I love this sort of stuff, but my legs are just... after the steep stuff, like, it would be nice to get after this park checkpoint a bit of flat foot.
Yeah.
And then it just... my arse is really screwed, so...
You thought it was healing a bit, but it's...
It is healing. It's not as bad as 2 days ago. No, so it is a lot better. It's just getting in and out of the saddle and stuff. If you sit in one position, it's fine. I picked a load of stuff out of it last night, which is really pleasant. I was sat in the dark at like 1 a.m. in some car park with my shorts off. And speaking like...
That sounds so glamorous.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it?
The Timmelsjok starts in the Pasaya Valley and leads over to the Ozthal Valley. It's known as the Timmel to locals, which is a pre-Germanic word describing the alpine pasture land of the region, which is uneven, bumpy and rutted. The idea for the road was to create a pass that reaches 2,059 metres that would allow Ozthal locals to ski at midday and then drop down into northern Italy to relax under palm trees in Meran in the afternoon. In control car one, as we made our way over the pass, we spotted a rider on the tracker.
We're chasing down cap number 20, who is Sam Thomas. He raced last year. He was a rookie last year. He was really successful. It's great to see him doing really well this year.
And we've got some good windy roads coming up.
We saw Sam tucking into some Pringles on his way up, and I jumped out of the car to have a quick jog beside him while he was climbing.
Run, come on.
I will run. You're riding fast, Sam. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. It's beautiful out here, right? I'm loving it. But it's tough.
The Pringles are carrying you up well?
The Pringles are carrying me up. And and some bread, and some water, and some Coke. That's doing the job.
I'll let you go on before I cause a traffic accident.
All right. Cheers.
When the pass was being built between 1955 and 1959, work could only be carried out between May and November because of the harsh winter weather. Even in summer, snow remains on the peaks and the weather can be extreme. Later that night at Control Point 3, TCR photographer Angus Sun was waiting in a gazebo outside the hotel for Sam to arrive, and he found himself in the thick of a storm.
Around about 11, I think, he was on the move, and then all of a sudden we just heard the rain hitting the gazebo, and it was pretty light at the beginning, and then this huge crack of lightning and thunder just hit no more than 200 metres away from us. The entire village basically went out of power, the whole thing, pitch black. We were just put into darkness. It was pretty ominous. I think it woke everyone in the hotel up, basically, and all the old boys in the bar smoking inside were looking out the window. It was quite funny. One guy, he had a few, stumbled out, said goodnight to us, and looked up in the sky and turned back and says, "Rain," and carried on walking. And that was the last we saw of him. But yeah, no one showed up last night, so we waited until just before 1 o'clock, thinking that Sam was going to pop through, but he never did, and stopped about 7K down the road in a hotel and stayed the night. And then we didn't see him until this morning, and rolled in really early, like 7 a.m, I think. And he just said that he rode through the storm for an hour and got wet, but enjoyed it.
I sat down with Sam for breakfast. He was slowly spreading Nutella onto white rolls and had decided to get a hotel room because he'd thrown up a kebab that he'd eaten the night before.
So you rode last year. This year, you're currently riding in third position. So has there been a change in the way that you approached it? Or what do you think has been different?
Well, last year was my first ultra event. So I think we started at 10 in the night then. And then I decided to sleep already at 1 or so. Whereas now I was just like more conscious of not stopping, kind of. And everything I have to do or can do on the bike, then I just do it on the bike, like brush my teeth or whatever. It also helps.
I like it. I just imagine you just getting all your admin done on the bike.
Yeah, almost.
Come back to an empty inbox, you'd be like,
yeah.
Are you a bit annoyed that you're not feeling well? It's going to slow you down?
Well, yeah. Of course, I'd rather have that I just felt super good, but I'm just thinking, yeah, it's the way it is. Just have to deal with it. So I feel like today I have to rest a bit and recover, and I think also the stomach has to become a bit better with sleeping, so it should help. I'll go to bed in a bit, I think.
After Sam, two more riders arrived, Paweł Pawlowski and Job Hendricks, who was confident and fresh, But he said he wasn't at the TCR to race like the fast guys.
You say you're not here to race like the fast guys, but according to the ranking at the moment, you fall into that category. What's going on?
Yeah, I don't think I'm cycling very fast. I think it's with more experience. I mean, this is my first ultra ever. You can definitely do it faster. Definitely. I'm not one of the fast guys. I will keep saying that.
At the control point, we were struggling to pronounce the Timmelsjok pass, let alone climb it.
Timmelsjok.
When power was heading up the pass, the storm was reaching its crescendo.
When I was cycling up, everybody, nearly every car was stopping him. Where are you going? Where are you going? I said, I'm going to do that, yeah, tonight. Tonight, no, don't go there, don't cycle there. It's dangerous. Yeah, it was nice.
But it was okay?
Yeah, it was all right. I mean, I got the storm like 1,700 above the sea level. Then the storm came. I've seen it when I was climbing further away. And luckily there was a shed, so I just went in the shed. You know, the lightning, rain, everything around. I was sitting in the shed with my back and just falling asleep. And then I woke up because it went quiet. So yeah, so then I attack.
While the riders that we've met at CP3 have been blazing a trail at the front of the race, behind them, the riders are spread out and dotted along the route. I got a message on the Transcontinental voicemail hotline from one rider who was on her way through Nis en route for Belgrade in Serbia. She didn't leave her name, but her story really brought home the reality of what it's like looking for rough sleeping spots when the rain is lashing down around you.
Last night, it was raining pretty heavily and I was heading into Nis and I saw these kiosks on the side of the road. They were all shut, but they had this really nice looking veranda out the front, which I thought would fit me and my bike. So I stopped there for the night. I heard one dog when I arrived, but it didn't come out and shut up soon enough. So I rolled out my bivy bag, peeled off my soaking shoes and socks, and went promptly to sleep. I was woken surrounded by half a dozen dogs all barking and snarling, and I should have been terrified. In retrospect, it probably was terrifying, but there was nothing I could do about it because I'd pulled my nicks down to my knees just so that I could air things out, and there I was lying in a bivy bag on the ground, and I just wanted to sleep, to be perfectly honest. I tried yelling at them, but that just made them arc up more. Every time I moved, they just barked even louder, so I decided to try and wake them out. I rolled over and eventually they gave up and I woke up again when one of the stall holders arrived and started setting up. She didn't come over to me and I looked at her and she looked at me, but I was nowhere near her, so my alarm wasn't ready to go off yet, so I went back to sleep again. I was woken for a third time, not by my alarm, but by headlights shining straight on me. It was an ambulance and a police car. Apparently they'd been called because someone was sick or dying, and I had to explain to them that I was neither. And then I had to shimmy my nicks back up again in order to get up, pack up, and leave under their gaze. It's nice that people are concerned for their fellow humans, although I think the storeholder could have just come over and given me a thumbs up and I would have smiled and given her a thumbs up and we could have saved the police and ambulance people's time.
Around this time in the race, the number of people deciding to stop has a spike. They've been on the road for days and they might still not be past the halfway point. I want to try and offer some encouragement from Jet McDonald. He's the author of Mind is the Ride, a book that's an adventure through cycling and philosophy that he dreamed up whilst riding from Bristol to India with his then partner. I met Jet and we talked about a moment near the beginning of his trip that he called the slump.
For us, the slump happened in a suburban campsite in France, and so it was quite a banal setting in some ways. And there's different ways you can react to that. You can either sink deeper into your slump, or you can kind of embrace the challenge. And that embracing of the challenge is this kind of psychological step in itself. And in the book, I talk about how we embraced that challenge and understood that difficulty in terms of existentialism, because every chapter and every part of the book is based around a different philosophy. In existentialism, you have to kind of recognize that there's no pre-existing deity, there's no kind of pre-existing model to life that is going to draw you into the future. You have to take responsibility for your actions. There's no one telling you what to do. There's no higher power telling you what to do. And so you have to own your own fate, as it were, and make your own life. And that means that you kind of have to accept the challenge that faces you. And what gives you meaning is doing, is actually getting on with something. To be is to do. And those very challenges, those potholes in the road, those are the things that define and give meaning to your life. I'm not saying we thought all of that in a French campsite when we were lying around amongst the bluebells, but that kind of leap of kind of secular faith, if you like, towards a harder journey is something that we had to embrace. And in retrospect, I think those kind of existential ideas help me understand that. And once you embrace that challenge, once you embrace the hardness of the road, in a way, it brings you a kind of purposefulness that helps take you out of that kind of slump, that momentum that you find yourself in.
Before leaving for Control Point 3 in Austria, I spent the morning at the second control, just before it closed. There were riders and their things sprawled everywhere. Some had arrived the evening before and stayed at the hotel. Others had pushed through the night, and some were still on the parkour, racing to make it there in time. Hello. How are you doing?
I'm just trying to gather my brains.
Where did you sleep last night?
I didn't sleep last night. That's why. I slept 4 hours on the previous night. And that was fairly bad. I was attacked by mosquitoes like nuts. And they were just over my head. And I was within my BV bag and I felt protected, but still they were very present.
So you didn't sleep last night, but you were on the parkour last night. And it was quite wet.
Yes.
Was it okay? Was it a bit scary?
It was a bit scary, yeah. It was very intense. Like I pushed the bike very often, and also leaving Bulgaria, I sort of, my GPS was sending me funny places, and funny places, like you wouldn't even call that gravel, I guess. So that was very depressing, and I ended up in like a, it's not a coal mine, but it seemed like it. I was like, I need to get out, can you help me? And the guy was finding it difficult to explain to me how to exit. And I was like, I just want out of here. And he was like, So that seemed like it took absolute ages. And I've had numerous punctures, 4 over 3 days. So I used all my tubes and all my repair kit. I found it difficult in many ways. Because a kid threw a rock at me. I looked at him and he threw a rock at me and he was very good. He caught me on the ankle. I mean, it was all right, but it was fairly painful. So yeah, that was pretty intense and pretty interesting because I found myself having explanations. And I was like, oh, you know, we can't have an explanation for that. That was a very straightforward experience of something. Yeah, it's hard to summarize, but feeling very privileged in many ways. And I think yesterday was a weird day in that sense. Like, I was depressed in Bulgaria, like trying to leave and find myself in those places. And I was like, okay, if my GPS is not going to help me, I don't know what's going to happen. And then finally reaching Serbia at night was very encouraging. I've had a lot of very excited messages from my friends and family, and that was very touching too. It's very touching that when you give your loved ones an opportunity to really be involved or supportive, then they would do it. Just that simple. So it's cool.
Can you tell me your name and your cap number?
Pauline, number 55.
Thanks for talking to me, Pauline.
Thanks.
There's something about cycling that can take you to the limits of what you can achieve, not just physically, but psychologically. I mean, the bicycle is such an efficient machine that it can take you to the heights of mountains, and it could take you across the breadth of countries far quicker than might otherwise be possible, but that demands a lot of the human body. But not only that, it demands a lot of your kind of psychological stamina, and it can take you to kind of pits of hunger and anger at not having any food in the rain on a kind of sheer cliff face, but then tip you over the other side into the ecstatic joy of flying down a mountainside and almost feeling like you're taking off into the air.
I had a bit of a panic on the top of the Unity Arch because I got up there and then suddenly remembered that I have a massive phobia of heights. And I started having a panic attack and ended up having to kind of sit down halfway down the hill for half an hour and basically just cry as I tried to work out how to get down the rest of the mountain. And actually got this close to scratching as well. Because I thought, well, if I can't climb this mountain without getting a panic attack, how am I going to cope with all the others? So I did this one at night and in the rain, and it was much better.
What, because you couldn't see it?
Yes.
This is your strategy from now on,
yes,
then?
Yes, avoid anything with a good view.
So you were up on the parkour last night, were you, in the rain?
Yes, so yeah, I climbed up the mountain, set off about 4 this morning from the hotel, and climbed up and down the mountain in the rain, lugging my bike over rocks. And yeah, I've never been so excited to come down a hill in the rain and find there's just tarmac, smooth tarmac. It's beautiful. It's like living the dream.
Those extremes between the kind of passion and the pain, I think, increase the breadth of what you're capable of in a way that makes you kind of reevaluate who you are. It blows a kind of breath of life into the kind of skin of who you are, because it expands your sense of what you can do, I think.
Hi, Nicole.
Hey there.
We spoke to you at CP1, and yeah. You were fast. You were right up there at that point, and we had a good chat, and then you set off, and now it's sort of 2 days later, and I wasn't expecting to see you, so what's happened?
So, I had some bad luck tire-wise. I was a bit foolish, maybe, or a bit too rash on some of the descents. So I had a lot of punctures. And then the day before yesterday, I had 6 punctures, and I had 2 spare tubes. And then I patched them up with my repair kit. And then apparently the glue didn't work out, so I had to do that every 30k or so. So I managed to get into Sofia. And there I waited for the bike shop to open yesterday morning, so I could stock up on new spare tubes and get some new repair kit. And then yesterday on the gravel section I had another 3 punctures, 2 of which were a bit unfortunate because I saw a car coming up at me, which made me chicken, so I raked really hard and rammed over 2 stones, so double puncture, front and back. And that's when I found out that after some days you get a bit tired and it's hard to put your outer tires back on. So I used my tire lever, broke my tire lever, punctured my spare tubes, tried to patch them up with my repair kit. And then I found out that the repair kit that I bought in Sofia isn't airtight. So I at some point decided, let's go and walk down. because I had done most of the gravel section and it was a long road down still, but I guess, well, that's the only way I thought I could still make it to the checkpoint. And then some 4K into the walk, two Serbian guys stopped and they had a little pickup truck and they said, well, they couldn't speak any English, but they said Vranje and I said Vranje, and then I got a lift with them down. So now I'm here and I'm going to the bike shop to get some new spare tubes, and then I'll cycle back up to where I got picked up so I can still continue the race. I had a dip mentally, but I couldn't think properly when I was in the car back down yesterday because I thought I'd lost the race already. So actually, at the moment, I think I'm pretty happy that I can still continue, and we'll see what happens.
You been to sleep?
Tried to sleep for an hour and a half somewhere up the mountain. There's this mountain hut. We were going all night through the rain and pitch dark. You didn't see anything. And I was soaking wet, and I already had the emergency blanket under my rain jacket because I was so cold. I was shaking and shivering, and like 5:30, I put on dry clothes. Well, what I had of dry clothes, and then descended through the rain and the mist and got wet again. So, yeah.
In cycling, you have this strange situation where a very crap day or a very crap morning can be very quickly followed on its heels by a wonderful moment, a beautiful glimpse of a valley or a lake, or just a very simple act of kindness. And that can so very quickly tip you into a different head state. And that's one of the strange and wonderful things about cycling. It's almost like a chessboard, but you're kind of cycling across the pieces. And sometimes you find half your wheel in a kind of dark place and your front wheel's in a brighter world, and then you move into it and then you forget about the darkness behind you. But in the moment, it can feel very bleak. And there's a sense when you're doing a long journey like that, because of the sheer distances you're travelling, that you're compressing a lot of life into a shorter time.
Thanks for listening to the Transcontinental Podcast, sponsored by Komoot. I'm Tom Bonnet, and I hope the stories that I've brought you today have helped show the difficulty the riders face on the road, but also their drive to continue forward. For more stories from the heart of the race, please subscribe. And remember, you can get daily updates in our race report and on our social media channels.